This time Robert and Morris acted the two parts, and Morris's acting of the pig's efforts to avoid the advancing spear was so funny that the boys cried with laughter. At length even this palled. Jack began to clean his bloody hands on the rock. Then he started work on the sow and paunched her, lugging out the hot bags of coloured guts, pushing them into a pile on the rock while the others watched him. He talked as he worked. "We'll take the meat along the beach. I'll go back to the platform and invite them to a feast. That should give us time." Roger spoke.
"Chief."
"Hmm?"
"How can we make a fire?" Jack squatted back and frowned at the pig.
"We'll raid them and take fire. There must be four of you, Henry and you, Bill and Morris. We'll put on paint and sneak up. Roger can snatch a branch while I say what I want. The rest of you can get this back to where we were. We'll build the fire there. And after that..."
He paused and stood up, looking at the shadows under the trees. His voice was lower when he spoke again. "But we'll leave part of the kill for..." He knelt down again and was busy with his knife. The boys crowded round him. He spoke over his shoulder to Roger. "Sharpen a stick at both ends." Presently he stood up, holding the dripping sow's head in his hands.
"Where's that stick?"
"Here."
"Ram one end in the earth. Oh, it's rock. Jam it in that crack. There."
Jack held up the head and jammed the soft throat down on the pointed end of the stick, which pierced through into the mouth. He stood back, and the head hung there, a little blood dribbling down the stick. Instinctively the boys drew back too, and the forest was very still. They listened, and the loudest noise was the buzzing of flies over the spilled guts. Jack spoke in a whisper.
"Pick up the pig."
Morris and Robert skewered the carcass, lifted the dead weight, and stood ready. In the silence, and standing over the dry blood, they looked suddenly furtive. Jack spoke loudly.
"This head is for the beast. It's a gift."
The silence accepted the gift and awed them. The head remained there, dim-eyed, grinning faintly, blood blackening between the teeth. All at once they were running away, as fast as they could, through the forest, towards the open beach. End of Disc 4. Lord of the Flies, Disc 5. Simon stayed where he was, a small brown image concealed by the leaves. Even if he shut his eyes, the sow's head still remained like an after-image. The half-shut eyes were dim with the infinite cynicism of adult life. They assured Simon that everything was a bad business.
"I know that."
Simon discovered that he had spoken aloud. He opened his eyes quickly, and there was the head grinning amusedly in the strange daylight, ignoring the flies, the spilled guts, even ignoring the indignity of being spiked on a stick. He looked away, licking his dry lips. A gift for the beast. Might not the beast come for it? The head, he thought, appeared to agree with him. "Run away," said the head, silently. "Go back to the others." It was a joke, really. Why should you bother? You were just wrong, that's all. A little headache, something you ate, perhaps. "Go back, child," said the head, silently. Simon looked up, feeling the weight of his wet hair, and gazed at the sky. Up there, for once, were clouds, great bulging towers that sprouted away over the island, grey and cream and copper-coloured. The clouds were sitting on the land. They squeezed, produced moment by moment this close, tormenting heat. Even the butterflies deserted the open space where the obscene thing grinned and dripped. Simon lowered his head, carefully keeping his eyes shut, then sheltered them with his hand. There were no shadows under the trees, but everywhere a pearly stillness, so that what was real seemed elusive and without definition. The pile of guts was a black blob of flies that buzzed like a saw. After a while, these flies found Simon. Gorged, they alighted by his runnels of sweat and drank. They tickled under his nostrils and played leapfrog on his thighs. They were black and iridescent green and without number. And in front of Simon, the Lord of the Flies hung on his stick and grinned. At last Simon gave up and looked back, saw the white teeth and dim eyes, the blood, and his gaze was held by that ancient, inescapable recognition. In Simon's right temple, a pulse began to beat on the brain. Ralph and Piggy lay in the sand, gazing at the fire and idly flicking pebbles into its smokeless heart.
"That branch is gone.
Where's Sam Nerick?"
"We ought to get some more wood. We're out of green branches."
Ralph sighed and stood up. There were no shadows under the palms on the platform, only this strange light that seemed to come from everywhere at once. High up among the bulging clouds, thunder went off like a gun.
"We're going to get buckets of rain. What about the fire?"
Ralph trotted into the forest and returned with a wide spray of green, which he dumped on the fire. The branch crackled, the leaves curled, and the yellow smoke expanded. Piggy made an aimless little pattern in the sand with his fingers.
"Trouble is, we haven't got enough people for a fire. You've got to treat Sam and Eric as one turn. They do everything together."
"Of course."
"Well, that isn't fair, don't you see? They ought to do two turns."
Ralph considered this and understood. He was vexed to find how little he thought like a grown-up, and sighed again. The island was getting worse and worse. Piggy looked at the fire.
"You'll want another green branch soon."
Ralph rolled over. "Piggy, what are we going to do?"
"Just have to get on without them."
"But the fire." He frowned at the black and white mess in which lay the unburned ends of branches. He tried to formulate. "I'm scared." He saw Piggy look up and blundered on. "Not of the beast. I mean, I'm scared of that too, but nobody understands about the fire. If someone threw you a rope when you were drowning, if a doctor said, 'Take this, because if you don't take it, you'll die,' you would, wouldn't you? I mean..."
"Course I would."
"Can't they see? Can't they understand? Without the smoke signal, we'll die here. Look at that." A wave of heated air trembled above the ashes, but without a trace of smoke. "We can't keep one fire going. And they don't care. And what's more..." He looked intensely into Piggy's streaming face. "What's more, I don't sometimes. Supposing I got like the others, not caring, what had become of us?" Piggy took off his glasses, deeply troubled.
"I don't know, Ralph. We just got to go on, that's all. That's what grown-ups would do."
Ralph, having begun the business of unburdening himself, continued.
"Piggy, what's wrong?"
Piggy looked at him in astonishment.
"Do you mean the..."
"No, not it. I mean, what makes things break up like they do?" Piggy rubbed his glasses slowly and thought. When he understood how far Ralph had gone towards accepting him, he flushed pinkly with pride.
"I don't know, Ralph. I expect it's him."
"Jack?"
"Jack."
A taboo was evolving round that word, too. Ralph nodded solemnly. "Yes," he said. "I suppose it must be." The forest near them burst into uproar. Demoniac figures with faces of white and red and green rushed out howling, so that the little ones fled screaming. Out of the corner of his eye, Ralph saw Piggy running. Two figures rushed at the fire, and he prepared to defend himself, but they grabbed half-burnt branches and raced away along the beach. The three others stood still, watching Ralph, and he saw that the tallest of them, stark naked save for paint and a belt, was Jack. Ralph had his breath back and spoke. "Well?" Jack ignored him, lifted his spear, and began to shout, "Listen, all of you! Me and my hunters, we're living along the beach by a flat rock. We hunt and feast and have fun. If you want to join my tribe, come and see us. Perhaps I'll let you join. Perhaps not." He paused and looked round. He was safe from shame or self-consciousness behind the mask of his paint, and could look at each of them in turn. Ralph was kneeling by the remains of the fire like a sprinter at his mark, and his face was half hidden by hair and smut. Sam Nerick peered together round a palm tree at the edge of the forest. A little un howled, creased and crimson by the bathing pool, and Piggy stood on the platform, the white conch gripped in his hands. "Tonight we're having a feast. We've killed a pig and we've got meat. You can come and eat with us if you like." Up in the cloud canyons, the thunder boomed again. Jack and the two anonymous savages with him swayed, looked up, and then recovered. The little un went on howling. Jack was waiting for something. He whispered urgently to the others, "Go on, now." The two savages murmured. Jack spoke sharply, "Go on." The two savages looked at each other, raised their spears, and spoke in time. "The chief has spoken." Then the three of them turned and trotted away. Presently Ralph rose to his feet, looking at the place where the savages had vanished. Sam Nerick came, talking in an awed whisper.
"I thought it was, and I was scared."
Piggy stood above them on the platform, still holding the conch. "That was Jack and Morris and Robert," said Ralph. "Aren't they having fun?"
"I thought I was going to have asthma."
"Sucks to your asthma."
"When I saw Jack, I was sure he'd go for the conch. Can't think why."
The group of boys looked at the white shell with affectionate respect. Piggy placed it in Ralph's hands, and the little ones, seeing the familiar symbol, started to come back.
"Not here."
He turned towards the platform, feeling the need for ritual. First went Ralph, the white conch cradled, then Piggy, very grave, then the twins, then the little ones and the others. "Sit down, all of you. They raided us for fire. They're having fun, but the..." Ralph was puzzled by the shutter that flickered in his brain. There was something he wanted to say. Then the shutter had come down. "But the..." They were regarding him gravely, not yet troubled by any doubts about his sufficiency. Ralph pushed the idiot hair out of his eyes and looked at Piggy.
"But the... oh, the fire, of course. The fire."
He started to laugh, then stopped, and became fluent instead. "The fire's the most important thing. Without the fire, we can't be rescued. I'd like to put on war paint and be a savage, but we must keep the fire burning. The fire's the most important thing on the island, because..."
"Because..."
He paused again, and the silence became full of doubt and wonder. Piggy whispered urgently,
"Rescue."
"Oh, yes. Without the fire, we can't be rescued. So we must stay by the fire and make smoke."
When he stopped, no one said anything. After the many brilliant speeches that had been made on this very spot, Ralph's remarks seemed lame, even to the little ones. At last, Bill held out his hands for the conch.
"Now we can't have the fire up there. because we can't have the fire up there. We need more people to keep it going. Let's go to this feast and tell them the fire's hard on the rest of us. And then hunting and all that, being savages, I mean, must be jolly good fun. Sam Nerick took the conch. That must be fun, like Bill says. And as he's invited us to a feast, meat crackling. Oh, I could do with some meat. Ralph held up his hand. Why shouldn't we get our own meat? The twins looked at each other. Bill answered, We don't want to go in the jungle. Ralph grimaced. He, you know, goes. He's a hunter. They're all hunters. That's different. No one spoke for a moment. Then Piggy muttered to the sand, Meat. The Littlans sat solemnly thinking of meat and dribbling. Overhead the cannon boomed again, and the dry palm fronds clattered in a sudden gust of hot wind.
You are a silly little boy, said the Lord of the Flies. Just an ignorant, silly little boy.
Simon moved his swollen tongue, but said nothing.
Don't you agree? Said the Lord of the Flies. Aren't you just a silly little boy?
Simon answered him in the same silent voice.
Well then, said the Lord of the Flies, you'd better run off and play with the others. They think you're batty. You don't want Ralph to think you're batty, do you? You like Ralph a lot, don't you? And Piggy? And Jack?
Simon's head was tilted slightly up. His eyes could not break away, and the Lord of the Flies hung in space before him.
What are you doing out here all alone? Aren't you afraid of me?
Simon shook.
There isn't anyone to help you. Only me. And I'm the beast.
Simon's mouth labored, brought forth audible words.
Pig's head on a stick.
Fancy thinking the beast was something you could hunt and kill, said the head.
For a moment or two, the forest and all the other dimly appreciated places echoed with the parody of laughter.
You knew, didn't you? I'm part of you? Close, close, close. I'm the reason why it's no go, why things are what they are.
The laughter shivered again.
Come now, said the Lord of the Flies. Get back to the others, and we'll forget the whole thing.
Simon's head wobbled. His eyes were half closed, as though he were imitating the obscene thing on the stick. He knew that one of his times was coming on. The Lord of the Flies was expanding like a balloon.
This is ridiculous. You know perfectly well you'll only meet me down there, so don't try to escape.
Simon's body was arched and stiff. The Lord of the Flies spoke in the voice of a schoolmaster.
This has gone quite far enough. My poor misguided child, do you think you know better than I do?
There was a pause.
I'm warning you. I'm going to get waxy. Do you see? You're not wanted. Understand? We are going to have fun on this island. Understand? We are going to have fun on this island. So don't try it on, my poor misguided boy, or else.
Simon found he was looking into a vast mouth. There was blackness within, a blackness that spread.
Or else, said the Lord of the Flies, we shall do you. See? Jack and Roger and Morris and Robert and Bill and Piggy and Ralph. Do you? See?
Simon was inside the mouth. He fell down and lost consciousness. Chapter 9. A View to a Death. Over the island, the build-up of clouds continued. A steady current of heated air rose all day from the mountain and was thrust to 10,000 feet. Revolving masses of gas piled up the static until the air was ready to explode. By early evening, the sun had gone, and a brassy glare had taken the place of clear daylight. Even the air that pushed in from the sea was hot and held no refreshment. Colours drained from water, and trees, and pink surfaces of rock, and the white and brown clouds brooded. Nothing prospered but the flies, who blackened their lord and made the spilt guts look like a heap of glistening coal. Even when the vessel broke in Simon's nose and the blood gushed out, they left him alone, preferring the pig's high flavour. With the running of blood, Simon's fit passed into the weariness of sleep. He lay in the mat of creepers while the evening advanced and the cannon continued to play. At last he woke and saw dimly the dark earth close by his cheek. Still he did not move, but lay there, his face sideways on the earth, his eyes looking dully before him. Then he turned over, drew his feet under him, and laid hold of the creepers to pull himself up. When the creeper shook, the flies exploded from the guts with a vicious note and clamped back on again. Simon got to his feet. The light was unearthly. The Lord of the Flies hung on his stick like a black ball. Simon spoke aloud to the clearing.
"What else is there to do?"
Nothing replied. Simon turned away from the open space and crawled through the creepers till he was in the dusk of the forest. He walked drearily between the trunks, his face empty of expression, and the blood was dry round his mouth and chin. Only sometimes, as he lifted the ropes of creeper aside and chose his direction from the trend of the land, he mouthed words that did not reach the air. Presently the creepers festooned the trees less frequently, and there was a scatter of pearly light from the sky down through the trees. This was the backbone of the island, the slightly higher land that lay beneath the mountain, where the forest was no longer deep jungle. Here there were wide spaces interspersed with thickets and huge trees, and the trend of the ground led him up as the forest opened. He pushed on, staggering sometimes with his weariness, but never stopping. The usual brightness was gone from his eyes, and he walked with a sort of glum determination, like an old man. A buffet of wind made him stagger, and he saw that he was out in the open, on rock, under a brassy sky. He found his legs were weak, and his tongue gave him pain all the time. When the wind reached the mountain top, he could see something happen, a flicker of blue stuff against brown clouds. He pushed himself forward, and the wind came again, stronger now, cuffing the forest heads till they ducked and roared. Simon saw a humped thing suddenly sit up on the top and look down at him. He hid his face and toiled on. The flies had found the figure, too. The lifelike movement would scare them off for a moment so that they made a dark cloud round the head. Then, as the blue material of the parachute collapsed, the corpulent figure would bow forward, sighing, and the flies settle once more. Simon felt his knees smack the rock. He crawled forward, and soon he understood. The tangle of lines showed him the mechanics of this parody. He examined the white nasal bones, the teeth, the colours of corruption. He saw how pitilessly the layers of rubber and canvas held together the poor body that should be rotting away. Then the wind blew again, and the figure lifted, bowed, and breathed foully at him. Simon knelt on all fours and was sick till his stomach was empty. Then he took the lines in his hands. He freed them from the rocks, and the figure from the wind's indignity. At last he turned away and looked down at the beaches. The fire by the platform appeared to be out, or at least making no smoke. Further along the beach, beyond the little river, and near a great slab of rock, a thin trickle of smoke was climbing into the sky. Simon, forgetful of the flies, shaded his eyes with both hands and peered at the smoke. Even at that distance, it was possible to see that most of the boys, perhaps all the boys, were there. So they had shifted camp then, away from the beast. As Simon thought this, he turned to the poor broken thing that sat stinking by his side. The beast was harmless and horrible, and the news must reach the others as soon as possible. He started down the mountain, and his legs gave beneath him. Even with great care, the best he could do was a stagger.
"Bathing," said Ralph. "That's the only thing to do."
Piggy was inspecting the looming sky through his glass.
"I don't like the clouds. Remember how it rained just after we landed?"
"Going to rain again."
Ralph dived into the pool. A couple of little'uns were playing at the edge, trying to extract comfort from a wetness warmer than blood. Piggy took off his glasses, stepped primly into the water, and then put them on again. Ralph came to the surface and squirted a jet of water at him.
"Mind my specs," said Piggy. "If I get water on the glass, I got to get out and clean 'em."
Ralph squirted again and missed. He laughed at Piggy, expecting him to retire meekly, as usual, and in pained silence. Instead, Piggy beat the water with his hands.
"Stop it!" he shouted. "D'you hear?"
Furiously, he drove the water into Ralph's face.
All right," said Ralph. "Keep your hair on."
Piggy stopped beating the water.
"I got a pain in my head. I wish the air was cooler."
"I wish the rain would come."
"I wish we could go home."
Piggy lay back against the sloping sand side of the pool. His stomach protruded and the water dried on it. Ralph squirted up at the sky. One could guess at the movement of the sun by the progress of a light patch among the clouds. He knelt in the water and looked round.
"Where's everybody?"
Piggy sat up.
"Perhaps they're lying in the shelter."
"Where's Sam Nerick and Bill?" Piggy pointed beyond the platform.
"That's where they've gone. Jack's party."
"Let them go," said Ralph uneasily.
"I don't care."
"Just for some meat."
"And for hunting," said Ralph wisely. "And for pretending to be a tribe and putting on war paint." Piggy stirred the sand underwater and did not look at Ralph.
"Perhaps we ought to go too."
Ralph looked at him quickly and Piggy blushed.
"I mean, to make sure nothing happens."
Ralph squirted water again. Long before Ralph and Piggy came up with Jack's lot, they could hear the party. There was a stretch of grass in a place where the palms left a wide band of turf between the forest and the shore. Just one step down from the edge of the turf was the white, blown sand of above high water, warm, dry, trodden. Below that again was a rock that stretched away towards the lagoon. Beyond was a short stretch of sand, and then the edge of the water. A fire burned on a rock, and fat dripped from the roasting pig meat into the invisible flames. All the boys of the island, except Piggy, Ralph, Simon, and the two tending the pig, were grouped on the turf. They were laughing, singing, lying, squatting, or standing on the grass, holding food in their hands. But to judge by the greasy faces, the meat-eating was almost done, and some held coconut shells in their hands and were drinking from them. Before the party had started, a great log had been dragged into the centre of the lawn, and Jack, painted and garlanded, sat there like an idol.